Connecticut businesses are preparing to partially reopen this week, and many residents will go back to work after more than 2 months of strict stay-at-home orders. But as Connecticut Public Radio's Nicole Leonard reports, for people with underlying medical conditions, the move poses difficult questions.
Sarah Kitt had begun a two-week period of quarantine in her home in Fairfield, even before the official stay-at-home orders started, isolated away from her husband and children.
It was lonely. It was painful to have basically no contact other than yelling up and down the stairs to people.
Kitt has multiple sclerosis, and she took these precautions to make sure that nobody had brought the coronavirus into their home, because if they had, she might be at a higher risk of serious illness due to her condition and the medication she takes. And with the state resuming some business and community activities, she may have to do that again.
That's what it might have to come down to for families like mine, where one person is compromised, but everybody else has to get back to, you know, life as normal, or as normal as it's going to get.
Governor Ned Lamont and the Reopen Connecticut Advisory Committee have come up with specific ways in which restaurants, offices, retail stores, and other sectors can resume. They recommend people continue wearing masks, that indoor spaces operate at half capacity, and that workers use personal protective equipment. The goal is to restart the local economy and give people the opportunity to work without inciting a second wave of disease outbreak. But it's an uneasy situation for people like Kitt. Her husband lost his job at the beginning of the pandemic, so the prospect of work and health benefits is appealing.
If he finds a job and it requires him going somewhere in person, will he take it? And if he does, what are the precautions we're going to take, and how are we going to set up a decontamination space for him so he doesn't bring it home to me?
State officials are still urging older residents and people with underlying health conditions to stay at home. Dr. Albert Coe, an epidemiologist on the Reopen Connecticut Committee, says for those who do go back to work, masks, protective equipment, and education about social distancing and hygiene will go a long way in keeping everyone safe.
Those are all the mechanisms that are not only going to keep our population safe, but keep those people with underlying medical conditions, those people vulnerable for, you know, the severe complications of COVID, protected.
But Doug Schwann says it's not that simple. He lives with type 1 diabetes, a lifelong chronic illness that requires insulin and other treatment. If he ever struggles to manage the disease, his immune system could be impaired.
Being diabetic, the first thing I was really taught by my doctors was like, you can be completely independent, but you have to think ahead about things that most people never will have to.
So early on, Schwann bought masks with filters and other supplies. He prepared for the possibility that his employer, a nonprofit in New Haven, would move to telecommuting. But with a position that involves frequent in-person contact, Schwann says that wasn't an option for him. He's had to stop working and began collecting unemployment.
I'm really not sure my job's even going to be there when all of this ends.
But if the government is still recommending that people who are at higher risk of COVID-19 complications stay home, Schwann questions what that means for people who want to stay safe from the virus but need to earn an income or get benefits like health insurance.
So then, is the government going to continue my unemployment insurance? Are they going to pay for my insulin? Are they going to pay for my insulin pump supplies?
Some public health experts have suggested that special considerations be given to people with underlying health conditions. Things like providing them with N95 masks, continuing remote work, or making adjustments to minor job functions. Lisa Levy, staff attorney at Greater Hartford Legal Aid, says these might be viewed as reasonable accommodations, which are typically granted under fair employment and disability laws that protect against discrimination.
If their disability is placing them at a higher risk due to the COVID, then I think arguably that person would have a viable claim to a reasonable accommodation in the workplace, depending on the specific circumstances.
Levy says people should also know what their rights are concerning information they're asked to divulge on job applications or during interviews.
People do have a right to be concerned, but people should be really aware that in the hiring process, no questions about COVID-19 and its relationship to you should come up.
Sarah Kitt says there's still a lot of unknowns about how to go forward from here. But as people resume activities, she hopes they remember that the pandemic continues to present scary challenges for families like hers.
I don't have the answers. All I can say is I don't want to die. You know, that's the only answer I have. So I'm going to be staying home for a long time.
Connecticut will begin its first phase of reopening on May 20th. Nicole Leonard, Connecticut Public Radio.